Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today, we have one of the most successful venture capitalists joining us. Her name is Jean Sullivan, and she has recently been named by Forbes as one of the most powerful venture capitalists changing the world. Her NetSuite IPO at the time was one of the largest in the tech industry. After many years of successful ventures and corporate deals, Jean Sullivan has transformed into a powerful force working on issues that she is passionate about. This episode, we will discuss with her the venture capital world and her current projects and passions. Then we will have founder of Options Away, Heidi Brown, joining us. She has taken her extensive background in the finance and investment banking industry and created a unique approach to the travel industry. She allows customers to use options to purchase airline tickets. It's not as complicated as you might think, and it allows customers to save money. And she will come today and explain in a very clear way what she does with options and how she uses it with the travel industry. It's a really innovative approach, and it's interesting. So first, let's talk to Jean Sullivan. Hi, Jean. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sarah. Delighted to be here.
You have funded many successful ventures that have gone on to earn a lot of money for the founders and its investors. One that gained your firm national recognition was NetSuite, the NetSuite IPO that had a $1.6 billion market capitalization. It was the second highest IPO since Google at the time, which is really impressive. Why do you think you were able to become so successful at this when others are not? I mean, basically, what's your secret?
Thanks for the question, Sarah. Love telling the NetSuite story. This is the part that was so great. We were early to understand the SaaS, software as a service world, and what cloud-based companies were all about. And because we put our bets down early, in fact, we were the only institutional venture capital firm alongside Larry Ellison, who invented the company, and therefore, we saw that opportunity.
And what do you mean by the cloud-based opportunity? Because there was a lot of opportunities, you know, in the whole dot-com bubble, but they were investing in things that were just pie in the sky and didn't really have anything behind it. So are you saying that we were early in investing in something that was real?
The whole software as a service movement came about in the 90s, I had been attending tech-based conferences. I was at Bell Labs before I joined and put together our fund, Starvest, and I was in another very large European-based fund. And so I had a strong grounding in technology and had been going to wonderful conferences such as Esther Dyson's conference, where we talked about SaaS and cloud as the long tail. And you know, of course, that means that companies are able to access functionality through a browser. You don't no longer had to bring in big equipment and have database managers and all kinds of tech people running around. And that was a game changer, total game changer.
It basically allowed them to take all that server stuff, all the management and stuff, and put it to someone else. And then you could just deal with the end user easy. You don't have to manage all that stuff anymore.
And the pricing model was completely different. No more upfront big license fees. Instead, you rent by the month, by the year, by multiple years. It would completely change the entire business model. It's very, very hard to start up back then because companies were very used to getting big upfront fees. But wow, it is absolutely a sea change. And today, even big companies, small companies, all not only adopt, use, but many, many companies are now cloud-based instead of traditional topology. We understood that before most, and that's partly what went into.
And it was all database-driven, right? I mean,
correct.
Correct. I remember back in the day, we always said that everything was going to be database-driven, which is really what's panning out. What's
right.
happening?
Right. So here's a fun part of the NetSuite story. I got to go with my very talented partner to Larry Ellison's house, and we met with him. Because this was early days for NetSuite, so it was back in 2000. And he painted the picture. You wouldn't buy, if you were buying a car, the steering wheel over here and the carburetor over there. So he understood, as one of the great geniuses of our time, that having one suite where everything was together, and NetSuite in the center is a financial suite with ERP, meaning Enterprise Resource Planning, and CRM, Customer Relationship Management, fully integrated. And he saw that.
Well, because the data is integrated, and so you really need
correct.
To. Otherwise, it's a big nightmare trying to integrate the data across all these systems. And that's why so many businesses were having so much. It's so costly and so expensive and so many problems. And so they solved that behind the scene, but then also solved the management part.
Indeed. And because of that, the company then, Larry actually appointed his very finest tech guy to build this and then put an amazing team together. The CEO has scaled the business, an extraordinary CEO, Zach Nelson. And Debbie, my partner, has been the lead director for many years, and now it's a multi-billion dollar market cap company. But here's the best part of the story also. We then, because we understood SaaS and cloud before most, in fact, highly articulated it in our earliest private placement memorandum when we sought to put Starvest together, we have invested in more than 30 cloud and SaaS-based companies. So we were not only early to spot it, but continued to focus on that world, that SaaS world, and saw the value in multiple sectors, all business to business, though, just to say that.
Sure, because that's where a lot of the money's at. So,
indeed.
And what is that pretty much your secret? You focused on where the money and where you think the biggest game changers were going to happen, where it was going, and you were early to the party with the right players doing the good stuff.
Indeed, but not only that world, what we continually did was trying to understand what would be the favored sectors coming up. For example, we were early to search. When that whole world of search came about, big companies were totally befuddled by, how do I do this? How do I hire for the capability for this within my company? And we invested in a company that understood this far ahead of others, and then they got acquired. So there's an example. We were early in e-commerce data and analytics. And when we put together our next fund, we were early to say data analytics, even though now that's certainly pervasive. And so looking for companies that aggregated data. A company as an example that I spotted and in fact I spotted it via a great NetSuite conference was a company that pulled together data aggregation in the farm business. They understood what used tractors were all about and became the Kelley Blue Book of the farm equipment.
Yeah, there's just so much there. I still think that there's a huge, huge way to go in looking at things from a data perspective, and that there's so many opportunities. We're still in the infancy of understanding it, because as I talk to people that are in the, you know, the consulting and the project management and all the IT stuff, people still aren't looking at it from a data perspective. And so I think there's just so much opportunity
there. That's right. And another area has been security. online, the protection of data.
Absolutely, yep.
And that's been critical, and we have a real winner in the portfolio for that. And our hand was involved by putting a fabulous CEO to run that company. And he was a CEO of one of our companies that had been in an earlier fund for us. So putting the right people in there, that's critical. We have a one-liner that says the right CEO who gets the wallet out of our pocket knows what to do and how to do it. We sought those kinds of dynamic CEOs all along the way.
And the dynamic CEO that knows how to put good people around them as well, right?
Critical. It's absolutely critical. The right CEO will know how to look left and right and out over time, will know how to fund the company, will know how to build those strategic partnerships, which are critical. And of course, I like the Jim Collins theory of putting the right people in the right seats on the bus. And that's an everyday constant effort by a savvy CEO.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to that. Okay. Well, I heard you mention that there are common mistakes that entrepreneurs do that keep them from getting funding. And you see this on a regular basis, I'm sure, with people that approach you. What are the biggest mistakes that you often see?
You know, one of the first mistakes that will not get you the next meeting, and that's what's critical, to get that second meeting and then keep going, is being able to even articulate the vision. You wouldn't believe it, Sarah. People can't even get it out their mouth. Certainly inexperienced and first timers. And it's important to paint the picture, to show how you're going to scale the company, to show the kinds of, understand the kinds of funding and capitalization needed to drive the company forward. These are critical. And you wouldn't believe how many CEOs, especially technology-focused CEOs, are so in love with their product instead.
And so they don't focus on the numbers, is what you're saying. How is it going to influence, like, you want to look at how what money they're going to need to fund it, at what time frames, how much market share they're going to get, that kind of stuff, right? The resources they believe they're going to need.
Well, notice I started with articulation of the vision, potentially the product roadmap, your go-to-market strategy. You've got to be able to get that out, and you've only got a few minutes to really get the attention. But the second thing is the whole world of being highly articulate about the numbers. And even though guys do this too, I need to share the fact that this is where I'm so passionate about working with women, that women often don't have that handle on the financial piece of the business. It's critical for success.
Well, you almost have to look at the whole business from a number standpoint, right?
Important and critical. And to be able to spell that out. And my quick advice is to put someone at your side, male or female, who is very street savvy about the numbers, and turn to them. They'll make you look smart, and they can teach you so that you as a CEO can be highly articulate about it. It's important.
And use the right words, right?
Oh, indeed.
So if you say the right stuff without the right words, does it not work?
It doesn't work because they'll lose confidence in your abilities. And a piece of advice I always give, because I'm often called on, I'm in New York City where we have entrepreneurial gatherings all the time, so I'm often meeting and listening and talking with entrepreneurs. And something I tell them is watch Shark Tank. Those people that pitch on Shark Tank, you can see for yourself who wins the dollars and who does not. And it's often because they are sharpshooters on the numbers. It's important to understand what are the capital needs over time.
But do you like some of the Shark Tank? I watched it a couple times, and sometimes it really is hard for me to watch because they're so mean to some of those entrepreneurs. And I just, you know, there was one that I remember I was watching just the other day where these people were selling popcorn, and they were living out of a closet for a couple years, and they were, you know, doing everything they can. They ended up getting funded. They were actually, I thought it was a good idea, but one of the guys just absolutely despised their idea, which is fine, but he would not drop it. Just kept talking about it, and then trying to convince the other people that they were morons for liking it. And it's painful for me to watch sometimes because those poor entrepreneurs that give up everything to do this and then they get just demolished. I have a hard time with that part of it.
You know, Sarah, don't forget, this is TV land.
I know.
It's about entertainment too. But I will say to you, it's highly instructive for an entrepreneur in today's world, because after you see it for a while, you can certainly see who's got the street savvy to be able to pull it off. Even as being pummeled on the numbers, if they keep coming back, you know, with appropriate negotiation, et cetera, they get the dollars.
Because they know they think about it from a number standpoint, right?
Critical. Because if you don't sell your company right, you are giving away a lot. And if you are able to get the financing runway required to build a business, hey, you're off to the races. I think it's a great instructive show.
Well, how do you, you say that you need to get the money out of their wallets, and there's a skill to getting investors to bet on an entrepreneur, but how do you get them to open their wallets and give you the money that you need and give it to you at a price that doesn't take away your whole business?
Well, look, that's where experience counts. And there are now so many successful entrepreneurs that if you're a new founder or entrepreneur, it's important to reach for people on your advisory board or build a board. In fact, I often give advice, even in the earliest days, pull together three or four people that are additive to your brain on knowledge and conduct regular meetings, even if they're virtual. Pick one or two or three subjects that are critical, such as how am I going to get funded and what's my slide deck look like. These are the people who are successful by reaching for the knowledge and putting those people around them. And what's good news is there are lots of those people no matter what city or town you live in.
Yeah, Pete, there's a lot of people that understand numbers and how to work it and how to do that. So are there certain investment deals that you like more than others?
Oh, totally. Number one, you have to make sure, especially if you're going for either angel funding or institutional funding, that you're playing into a large market space. That's critical. So you've got to be able to articulate that. Well, how big is this? And why do I have a unique, unfair, competitive advantage? You see, back to a great question you asked, what about the ones that really do get the funding? They are able to show not only I have a great product or service, I have a great team, and here's our domain experience, but a critical third metric. How am I going to scale this company? Because that's about execution. Do you know, Sarah, often many entrepreneurs even leave the slide out that says, here's my go-to-market strategy. Here are my potential target customers. Here are my partners. And by the way, here are potential exit opportunities. Those are the CEOs who get the investor all thrilled about playing with this particular CEO.
Well, because, right, it's hard to, there's a different skill set from going from, you know, bringing something to market, the startup, versus scaling it. And a lot of entrepreneurs only think of the whole new thing and they want to just do the new, but you have to figure out how to build that thing. And it's different.
That's why I said, the right CEO knows how to look left, look right, and look out over time. That is more important than one might think. And let me contrast that with something that is my marker for, this person's not going to get a second meeting from us. And that's when they're so in love with that product and service that they start with, let me show you a demo. Now, believe me, there's plenty of successful venture capital investors who that's all they want to see. Show me you got something new and incredible. But I'd say most of us like to hear what I call the business of the business.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's a real marker if they say, you know, foist that a demo upon you. I'm talking about the first minute. The demo's critical, of course. But I want to hear, here's my vision, here's how I'm going to build it, and here's the incredible team I have around me.
And then, after all that, then the demo should be something of greatness, too. But you have to show that you're not just about the product, right?
Correct.
And in tech, you see that way too often. I know that I all my experience, I saw that. And that's what kind of keeps things from getting done in companies and stuff, too. You get so many people that are enamored by certain things, and they lose sight of what the business goals are.
Critical.
So I read that you like first and second round deals. How out of the startup seed company phase do you like companies to be before you'll get involved?
So that's a great question. For our fund, we were highly focused more on the B, C, and rounds after that. We liked what's called expansion stage, and we define that as having at least $2 million top-line revenue. It doesn't have to be profitable. In fact, we wouldn't expect that. But because of the work I've done for many years with women founders, I've been involved with many, many angel and seed stage companies. In fact, I have a great love of seeing that early company. And therefore, that's a specialty art for sure.
Well, that's scarier. You have to really have your ducks in a row, right?
Yes, asked about that one time from someone very focused on these early days. Here's my answer. I believe the brain and the gut need to really connect. In other words, the brain sees that this could be enormous opportunity, and the gut saying, wow, this person really has the right stuff to get the ball over the finish line. And it truly, I am in awe, I'm in praise and respect of those early stage angels and early funds that can actually pick them way, way early before they've really proven themselves. This is an admirable skill. And it has been thrilling for me for more than 25 years to see this in action.
Well, it's just so fun, right? You're just working with the most creative people.
It is so fun, Sarah. This is why it's been a great journey to be an investor. And I'm just so proud and so humbled by the incredible entrepreneurs I've met along the way.
Well, do you have a lot of people that you work with that, I assume you're not investing your own money in most of these deals. Do you have a lot of big people that you work with to manage their money?
I've been part of a great team. There were four of us that founded our fund, and now I'm a special advisor, and I am an angel investor, and I'm proud to be part of very focused on women, high-growth women founders. So I am very involved in the angel world. And in fact, before we founded our fund, one of my partners and I founded the predecessor to a very large, successful New York Angels fund. And we ran that for more than 6 years as a real labor of love. So I've had a grounding in this angel world for many, many years. And New York in the 90s was the go-go place called Silicon Alley. It went through the whole dot-com bust, but now it's back bigger than ever with a lot of angel investing here. And I'm part of that ecosystem.
Oh, that's fun. So what? Yep. And I've read that you have a new passion going on. So in the last 6 years, you've taken your influential powers in a new direction. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Here's what happened. Because we were three women general partners and we did have our one trophy male, we were called on for what I call the women's conversation. People would call on us to say, will you speak and tell us about, you know, women getting funded or playing in the sandbox as a woman venture capitalist.
And this is because there's an issue out there, right? Because only 3% of the female entrepreneurs are getting funding.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me. Sarah, I'm just laughing at myself to share with you that until I got out there and became a student of the data, I had no idea how hard it truly was, not only for a woman founder and access to capital, just as you shared, the 3% number. But what about the low number of women on boards? What about the low number of women in the C-suite?
But do you think that helped you, though? Do you think that because you were ignorant, you just went out there and did it, and then you learned along the way? Do you think you would have went and did it if you knew the numbers beforehand?
No, you know what? I was oblivious to the plight, but what happened to me is I turned on as someone who's playing out there, on realizing I can do something about this. One company, one woman, one opportunity at a time. So I became passionate over the last 6 years about supporting women, and I love to say, and a few good men. Because there are those men out there who are having daughters, and they get it. And they also understand something that the research supports, that teams with women actually are proven to do better on their boards, in the C-suite. And in fact, I like to say even teams with diversity.
Well, it's diversity, right?
Diversity, color of skin, geographic location, language skills. I really believe that makes a difference. And here's why. Because we can look through a different lens.
But do you think it might even be more than that, in the sense that it could be the companies that embrace people who are different, have a culture that's more accepting and innovative and open, and they tend to just be more successful because of that?
Well, now you're really going too far. It's certainly the hope for quest. And I think we're...
You think I went too far?
I think we're directionally moving that way.
No, but I'm saying that the companies that are more open to that have a culture that's a little bit more...
I hope so.
Yeah.
The picture is still pretty dark as far as people generally embracing this whole concept about diversity or women being additive, but they're getting it. There's progress to report. But we are still far behind, and I'm sorry to say, I think it is going to take a couple more generations.
We have to die? I said, we have to die first?
Yes, but here's the best thing. We can teach our kids and our grandkids so that they can carry the mission on. And it's really pretty thrilling to see some progress.
Well, I just like to see the best people. You know, you get the best people, the best ideas. It's more of a humanist approach. You just get the best people around to work on stuff.
Well,
and that's I think it's so obvious and common sense, but.
Well, there's something to add to that scenario that's at play here. You see, the truth be known, and those of us who do know what truly is going on and the why of this, is because, let's face it, men do like to look around the table and see other like-minded individuals. So guess what? The way we're changing the game is have role models of successful women or people from different worlds be successful. Show that to an eighth grader or a high school person. And they say, hey, I can run a company or be an entrepreneur. And guess what? As we make successes and those are prospered, and guess who's going to help prosper those? The enlightened men, because they are the ones with the money today. They are the ones who are the bosses, leading the role, supporting us, promoting us.
What about all the women widows who have all the money that can be investors? I mean, there's so much untapped funds from women.
I love what you're saying, and let me tell you about that. There's a few dynamic, just incredible people who have founded organizations showing women that they can be angel investors if they wish. And do you realize, Sarah, that many women, especially of wealth, are quick to write a check to a charitable organization, but hadn't even considered spending the same dollars on funding a company? And so we are very involved, and I'm involved with two unbelievable organizations who do this in New York and other places in the U.S., but they're out of New York, showing women the way. And now, not only could you fund a company to help make a difference, but should it be successful, you've got that money. In other words, to be clear, I'm certainly for charitable donations, but I'm also for helping to prosper. This access to capital notion that is so hard for women to achieve, by showing women that they can support other women this way, I think it's powerful and a great way to go.
Yeah, there's a lot. See, I'm back to the humanist thing. Just get the best people to do things, and everything works out rosy in the end. And if you're not funding the best people, then you're missing out on so many opportunities. Okay, so what did you start to, what things are you doing then to really get that conversation started? And I know you talked about some right now, but what other things are you doing?
Well, a few things. First of all, just as a give back, if someone needs to meet with me, connect, get ideas, or understand where to point, I'm happy to meet with them, and I do that tirelessly. It really is my season of service and how I'm paying back the many people who opened doors for me and showed me the way, gave me that chance. Second of all, I'm very involved in not only the New York arena, but I'm involved with incredible, these are vibrant organizations that really care about these issues that we're talking about today. Many of them are focused on promoting women, high-growth women entrepreneurs, but there are many initiatives right here in this town of incubators and accelerators. So if asked to speak, I go and speak or meet with them. And as I laughed about earlier, including a few good men, because there are some of those who get it, who want to prosper and succeed. And those, New York is so vibrant with this. But I also travel to coasts and other tech areas to share ideas, information, and inspiration.
Okay, and so you're really trying to get the word out on all this good stuff that you're doing. Well, I know you've morphed into a special advisor with your fund. What are you doing with that? And what does that mean as a special advisor?
So it really means that after many years, 16 to be exact, and as a co-founder of our fund, it was time for me to try other things. And I'm still scouting for us and looking for deals that might fit, which is that tech-enabled business services world that I mentioned.
Yeah.
At the expansion stage, and then on call as needed. But I've really been thrilled to be an advisor to other companies and to entrepreneurs. And then something new in the last 6 months, I've been on a multi-city tour showing people of all ages, especially 50 plus, that if we want to be an entrepreneur, we can be, and prospering the notion of economic vitality for all ages. And that has been thrilling.
Basically, any age can do it, right?
Any age. And here's what's really thrilling. Some research has been done, and there are 75 million of us as baby boomers. That means people from ages 50 to 70 in today's world. And guess what? We are living our life differently than our parents or grandparents. And right now, we are the largest cohort starting new businesses. How do you like that?
Well, that's great. And is that because people are just wanting to get out of the corporate world and just they're realizing they want to just follow their passion? Or is it that in combination? How much lifestyle businesses are you seeing versus people that are going out and saying, okay, I want to change this market?
You know, there's no doubt that there are a variety of subject matter and types of businesses, from lifestyle to high growth businesses. People have had an idea burning inside of them that they've always wanted to create. And I say go for it, all of it. And yes, certainly plenty are small businesses, et cetera. But that's okay, because guess what? We are living longer, 30 years longer, post leaving, let's say, that corporate job. And we have thousands of hours of experience using the Malcolm Gladwell concept of 10,000 hours and you're an expert. Well, you start multiplying that by years in a company. Why shouldn't, let's say you've had a C-suite role or you have experience, vast experience, anywhere from customer service to whatever. So now we are really promoting the fact of joining with the guys in the hoodie, with the 20, 30-year-olds who are starting
in the hoodie. Well, do they need to unlearn things first, though? I mean, does a corporate world indoctrinate you into a different thing that keeps you from being entrepreneurial?
You know, I don't see it that way at all. I did the corporate thing because I was with a large telco, AT&T and Bell Labs, for many years. And here's what I learned. I learned best practices. I learned how to organize large projects and people. I learned how to hire and fire and to manage things. And so the facts are that actually people might think that cohort of, let's say, boomers, don't even have the skills or technology skills, but the facts are that is not true. I'm one of the first to use Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the popular social media platforms, and there's many of my colleagues that are in the same way.
Well, yeah, and you came from the high-tech sector, and you came from telecommunications, which was at the forefront of the Internet.
Right.
So you got Correct. You were actually first to use most of that stuff. I remember because I worked at US West, and I was the first to introduce, if you can believe this, email to the company. And
Right.
and so, you know, you end up being a first to do all this stuff. But is there a different mindset? You know how entrepreneurial, there's this mindset of get it done and it doesn't matter. You have to get into the trenches and not be afraid to get dirty. Do you think that there's some of that?
You know, this is where the multi-generational concept comes into play. That's where having this intercommunication, pulling in somebody who has the experience, but showing them, you know, how to be a lean startup entrepreneur as a younger person, let's say leading the company, that's where this is working, and that's what we're promoting.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Isn't that fun?
That is awesome.
Something to add to it is we've been doing this in conjunction with the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. Have you seen that movie yet?
I haven't. You were telling me about it, and I've heard so many good things about it.
Well, it's so much fun because we were showing it in pre-release, and now it is released widespread. But here's the thrilling part. Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, Bill Nighy, all as entrepreneurs in their 70s. Judi Dench says, I'm 79. I'll take the job. And so it is thrilling to see this. They're all in India at the senior living hotel. Maggie Smith is helping the young Dev Patel run this hotel-like place. And it is so on message that we laughed out loud when we saw it.
So it gets to the point of the multi-generational thing and how your skill, the wisdom that you have over the years to help the young who are ready, that have, you know, want to get down and dirty and do all these things and have the energy, you help them and guide them in the wisdom that goes with that.
Well, yes, and not only that, but guess what? Many of us, certainly including me, we are allergic to the R word. Do not even think of using anything but refire with me. There's no way. I have too much firepower inside me to slow down. And I want to leverage this vast knowledge and experience and just keep going, you know? I think, and
well,
that's
and don't
what
you
I'm
think,
finding
and,
with my career.
And it's, retirement can be just finding your passion and using all your energy for the rest of your life on things that you really want to do.
Sarah, did you just use the
I did, but I had to tell people what it was. Just in case they didn't know.
You snuck it in there.
I did.
And I have to laughingly say there is no way. I'm definitely allergic to the word, and I know why. It sounds like old, you know? That's what people do when they get older. I am no way going to hang it up. I want to just keep going. It is so much fun to play in this sandbox of entrepreneurism and making grass grow on bare ground.
Well, and watering that bare ground and getting it really fertile, right? Isn't that what you're doing now? You're going and putting nutrients into the soil?
Thrilling. Thrilling.
So
I'm having a ball.
So what's next for you?
Well, what's what's next for me is to continue to advise. I'm on the speaking tour, which is thrilling. I've been asked to share this knowledge, both about what's happening in the venture world, what's happening for women, what's happening in this experienced economy, which is a phrase that we coined. And I love that, because that is what it's all about, driving the economy forward with jobs, with experienced people. And then I will humbly share that just this past Saturday, I did a TEDx talk for Barnard College, and that was a thrilling experience.
Can we have that TED talk linked to the radio page so that people can get to it?
Thank you. They're going to roll it out within the next 30 days, so I'll send it your way. And I met amazing fellow speakers, and it was a very exciting event.
Oh, that's awesome. What was your TED talk on? I mean, I assume it's in this area, but what specifically, what did you do? What did you talk about?
Well, brace yourself for this. I definitely chose an edgy topic, and it was called Dealing with Bullies, Bozos, and Buffoons, Master the Minefield. And the subtext being lessons learned at 20, 30, 40, and beyond. So I had a great passion to share experiences along the way of dealing in this very tough man's world and how to master that. And it was really thrilling to share thoughts and ideas around that.
Well, and how do you do that and still stay really positive and want to, you know, instead of getting sucked into it and becoming the negativity that you see, it's important to remain a guiding light, right? And be a change in that and help people be better instead of becoming the negative bully that you're surrounded by.
My one-liner was and is, you don't have to be nasty, but you do have to be sassy. And so using humor really helps get through that minefield. And just dealing I also shared standing up, stepping up, and speaking up. So it is important to be open, to be transparent, to be authentic, and just tell it straight. And just deal with these people, and there's many of them. Do you know, having put the research together for this, there's actually something called the Workplace Bullying Institute. And, you know, they share that more than 72% of people in the workplace have not only experienced bullying or have observed it. So I shared that in my talk because I don't want people to feel alone as they might experience these things.
Yeah, because it is kind of a cultural issue that we have. How much do you see that just in the whole investment world? And because the people who are seeking funding are at a much less powerful position than the people who have the funding, do you see
Now you're asking for inside baseball.
I am. Well, you know, when there's a power difference and it's huge, that's where you see a lot of the bullies come out.
There's no doubt. And I'd say our investing world breeds this type of world. And here's why. It's all about competitive nature, going for the gold, out foxing the person next to you. So it does breed a certain competitive type of person, but it's not just our field. I believe it's all fields. I was with a doctor the other night, and I said, I know it's very political in a hospital. And you know what his answer was? I loved his answer. Yes, but I feel it's just like dealing with any issue. You got to manage it.
It's true, yes. That's a good answer.
Yeah, I appreciated that too.
Well, how can people get hold of you? What is the best way to learn about your stuff and get hold of you?
I'm active on Twitter with many thousands of followers, and I'm happy for people to ping me there, GIANNA212, Gianna212, or email. I'm happy for people to email me, and find me. And so if you want to post that on your website, I'm more than
Yes, I will
welcome.
Do that. And then you get us the information for your business site and whatever contact information. And people
Thank
want to
you.
Maybe book you for a talk or have a good business idea they want to pitch to you, they can get
I
a hold of you.
I would be honored. I would be honored. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. You really are a, as they say, that you're a New York treasure or a New York gem, I read. So that's really.
Well, I share that I escaped from the Midwest more than 34 years ago. So I even understand your Minnesota accent. So
do I have a Minnesota accent?
Yes, you do. But I grew up in Illinois, so I appreciate it. But it's been great fun to be an East Coaster and a New Yorker for many years, and just thrilling to be in this a very vibrant community here now. So that has been a great journey for me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah.
If you want to reach Jeanne Sullivan for a speaking engagement, or if you have a great project you want to pitch to her, you can find her contact information on my website at sarahwestall.com. Now we will have Heidi Brown joining us with Options Away.
Hi, Heidi. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
You have a business that has turned travel into options, like the financial industry. You're this options thing. And so I want to get into what this is. But before we get into what options are and how you put that into the travel industry, what did you do in the finance industry before you got into building your business?
Well, I started as a trust fund administrator, and I was really interested in the trading aspect and investment. And I thought foreign currencies would be a really exciting way to go. So I started on a foreign exchange desk, and that's where my trading experience took off. I did that for many years. I eventually ended up on the bond side. And I worked for a German bank for many, many years and spent almost a decade in Europe, kind of traveling around and visiting all the different European countries and trying to convince people, big institutionals and commercial players, that my bank was the best and I could represent all their treasury needs.
What bank did you work for?
I worked for a bank, get ready for it, Deutsche Genossenschaftsbank.
Was it one of the bigger ones in Germany?
It is one of the bigger ones. It's a central co-op bank and everyone knows it there. So it's huge. It's a big player.
Okay. And you loved it, huh?
I did. I loved it. I loved the lifestyle. I mean, Germany has such a great work-life balance. By the time I left, I had up to, I think, 10 paid vacation weeks. And
oh, for jeez. Oh. Holy buckets.
Yeah, so great.
Well, was it an ethical? Did you find it being an ethical environment that you were in?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a very well-regulated market in Germany, that's for sure. I find that the business tends to draw some rather unethical types. You know, there's a lot of money to be made, and that's just the nature of the beast. When there's a lot of money, it kind of pulls people in that perhaps shouldn't be given the responsibility that they're given.
Sure. It pulls in people that just want to make money and they don't care how they get there. So, and that's why regulation was served a purpose, I guess.
Well, that's no secret. I mean, the stereotypes of Wall Street are there for a reason. Everyone's not like that, certainly, but you know, and some of it is myth, but a lot of it is truth. And there's the scary parts are the ones that we don't know.
Oh yeah. And there's a lot that we're learning and just we can't do anything about. So you loved this industry and but you also did a lot of traveling, right? And you learned that you loved travel?
I did. Well, I've always loved to travel, but while I was working in Europe, it was around the time when all these inexpensive, low-cost carriers came out. So think Ryanair and Buzz Air, and all of a sudden, you know, you could fly from Frankfurt to Paris for $50 and that kind of thing. That was just unheard of before. plane tickets have always been viewed as kind of a high cost item, takes a lot of decision time. You know, there's statistics that people look at between 30 and 40 different websites now when they're booking a flight and go back to the same websites over and over again. And so all of a sudden there was these cheap airlines. Now, for sure, they're no frills, but they're very short distances. So it didn't really matter
as
much.
Well, for $50, who cares, right? You just want to get there and then you don't have the guilt of going there whenever you want to.
Exactly. And you feel like you can go for the weekend, you know, because you're not paying $600-$700 for a flight. And so if you want to go skiing or you want to go to the coast or, you know, it just seemed to be a little bit more accessible and a lot more flexible, you know? And so I got to thinking quite a bit about, boy, air travel is really changing, you know, and especially for young people. You know, I was in my 20s and it was a lot more flexible, and it was, people would just call each other and say, hey, do you want to meet in Prague this weekend? Sure, let's do it. And sure enough, you know, the internet was kind of a new phenomenon and booking online, and we'd go online, and sure enough, for, you know, £50 or $60 or whatever, we could buy ourselves a plane ticket and we'd be in Prague in an hour.
But isn't that cheaper than what we see here in the United States?
Well, it is. And again, it's not, it's even more expensive there now. It was just kind of, you know, you asked about how I started thinking about this business. And you do have, you know, things like, or companies like Spirit Air and Frontier that offer, again, the very low frills airline. Now it's not quite $50, but we are seeing a lot of very inexpensive fares, you know, $75. And these are one ways, by the way. So
sure.
In the industry, people tend to talk one way, whereas consumers think of it as a round trip. But yeah, so there's still a lot of good choices out there.
Well, you have this thing where you put options in with travel. Can you explain what options are? Well, first of all, if you can explain what options are in the financial industry and then how you applied that to your company.
Sure. I'm going to be as simple as I can here in saying that options provide people the right but not the obligation to either purchase or sell something. So what a call option is in the finance industry is that you can choose a price, and then if a stock or whatnot gets to that price, you have the right to purchase it, but you do not have to, right? So you just have the right but not the obligation. And I started thinking about that in terms of consumer goods. You know, instead of things like layaway or whatnot, what if for a very small fee you could say to someone, if a sale price gets to X, then I can email you and say, are you still interested in this, whatever it is, you know? And I started thinking, wow, there's a lot of money to be made here. And then when I look specifically at airline tickets, the reason it made such sense is that change fees are very, very expensive. And a lot of times once you buy the flight, it's yours. And especially with lower, I mean, if you start buying full fare refundable or business class, that's different. But if you're looking at just the leisure customer buying a cheap flight, once you buy it, it doesn't really make sense to change it. And so I started thinking, well, this is a really good product to sell an option on. Because if someone is not sure if they want to go or not, you know, it's not like if you're indecisive about a different product, you can always return it.
Yeah.
And so the way our models work now is for a very low fee, anywhere between $4 and $40, depending on different variables that I'll get to in a second. You can find the lowest flight price of wherever you want to go and whenever you want to go, and you can actually lock in that price.
You can lock it in if the ticket goes down to that price, you can buy it at that. But what happens if it doesn't? They won't.
It actually works like this. So you go on our website. It looks like any other online travel agency, like an Orbitz or an Expedia, and you will put in your destination and when you want to go. And instead of getting a buy button, you will get a hold button. And actually, there's multiple ones because we offer 24 hours, 2-day, 3-day, 5-day, 7-day, each with a different price. And so if you find a price that you like, you can lock it in. So what that means is you can either come back and purchase that ticket, but you will never pay more than that price. So what you're doing is actually locking in the price. You have the right to purchase that ticket in that time frame for that amount of money.
Oh, okay. So what happens if you, so it's not like in the finance industry where you say, if it gets down to $10, I will purchase it.
Well, we also have that possibility where people can call us and say, look, I really want to go to Vegas, but I only want to spend $210. That's possible. But I don't want to get too complex here, because one of the beauties, the beauty of our product is actually that it is so simple, and that it's find a fare, lock in the price, and then you have the right to purchase it at that price. But you don't have to. If you decide you can't go, for whatever reason, you can't get the time off work, or your friends can't get the time, or whatever, then you forfeit your $10, but there's no obligation. And you've bought yourself that peace of mind, that time to decide, you know, be it a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is you needed.
Oh, that sounds like a really great product. So how many people are using your service? Do you have businesses that use it too?
We do. We are basically a consumer website. It's optionsaway.com. And we are also a mobile app. And so people come, consumers come to Options Away and do just like I said, they lock in their price. We also have a business-to-business solution, which looks very different for each of our different commercial partners. But for example, right now, if you go on Expedia, on some flights, you will find a little hold button down at the bottom, and that will redirect people back to Options Away. Also, we've partnered with a company called Hipmunk that a lot of people use to purchase airfare and hotels.
Oh, interesting. So it really is a service for people who have a busy lifestyle and they just don't know if they're going to be able to do something or not. Or it also is a way to get a better deal on a airline.
Right. Well, we have a bit of a joke. We have a video and it starts with, do you ever wake up in the morning with regrets? And everyone chuckles. But almost everyone has been in the situation where they wanted to book their flight. They weren't quite sure, you know, dealing with a spouse or employer or finances or whatnot. And they didn't book it. They go online the next day and that flight's $50 more. Yeah. And everyone's got that kind of sunk feeling like, oh, you know, I wish I had have just. And so what we allow you to do, again, it's a simple product. It's buying yourself a little bit of peace of mind.
So do you like running your business?
I do like running my business.
Is it keeping you busy?
Well, that, Sarah, is an understatement. It's, I think when I started this, I thought the financial industry was complex until I got into travel, and the entire airline and airline revenue management is incredibly complex, and it's something that I had no experience in. So I would say that I don't want to say I bit off more than I can chew, that I could chew, but I certainly think that if I had have known what I was getting into, I may have treaded a little more slowly.
Because you guys are taking off, you're exploding, huh?
We're doing really well. I mean, people love the concept. Partners love the concept. You know, it's a great differentiator for big travel players to have on their website. So what I ended up doing is I ended up hiring some really great people to be around me, people from the travel industry.
Oh, you have to.
Ex-airline employers. I've got great developers, data scientists. And I'm a full travel agency now as well. So I've got a whole customer service team, which is new to me. So I'm learning all the time. And sure. I love that.
And you just surround yourself with the best people you can find so that your life is less of a headache. Right? I mean,
yeah, it's the best strategy.
If you're better than me, come on. Come on board.
Yeah. And I hired my husband as a CEO. So he's a Wall Street guy and has been for 20 years. And our business started taking off and it was so exciting. And we were getting great press and industry attention. And he just said, he's an entrepreneur at heart. And he just said, okay, that's it. And he quit his job. So now we're both doing it and we're all in.
Wow. So how do you like working with your husband? Is it a big pain in the butt? Are you ready to kick them in the butt and out the door half the time?
It depends on the day. it's interesting. Actually, we do a pretty good job. You know, the joke is that date night is always a strategy session. And look, it is difficult to turn it off. And we'll say, okay, that's it. We're not going to talk about work anymore. And then 5 seconds later, you're back into it. So there's a lot of that. But we both enjoy it. I mean, we did our MBAs together and we studied. And, we, you know, that's kind of always been part of our relationship. You know, we like it. So.
Well, good. At least that's.
The big joke is that we started a travel agency and we haven't been anywhere in years because we're so.
Oh, that's funny. Parker Posey's always in those like movies that are kind of a joke, and Eugene Levy. And there was a movie, I remember there was a couple in this movie that were travel agents, and they were the elite, you know, people in town, but they never went anywhere. They've never been outside of the town.
I do not know that film, but I must look it up because that is exactly how I feel. And you know, we just had spring break here this week and all my friends are going to all these grand exotic places. And I'm, you know, I took my kids to, we work out of something called 1871, which is the biggest tech work hub in the country. And so that's where my kids spent their spring break with 300 other startups.
Well, and, you know, when you're a startup company, you don't really want to, and you're probably getting past the startup phase, but you don't want to be spending money on all these things. I always make the joke that I'll take the bus. Right. You know, when you're, it's just the way it is. It's, you don't have all that extra cash until you get it really going, and then it's, life is good, but yeah, it takes time.
Right. And we just raised a bunch of money, which takes one pressure off, but then there's the time aspect. So now we have the money, but not the time.
Yes, exactly. Well, this has been a great interview. I really appreciate it. And how can people get hold of you, or how can they get to your website?
Options Away. I'm really good at SEO. So if you just type in Options Away, we'll be on the first page of Google. We're at Options Away on Facebook, LinkedIn, and we are at Options Away on Twitter.
Wow. Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you so much, Heidi. And good luck on your getting your business even more successful. Cause I already know you've already done a lot with this business. You were listed in the up and coming businesses in Chicago and all these other magazines. So you're well on your way.
Thanks, Sarah.
Okay. Well, good. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Remember, you can reach Options Away at optionsaway.com. Interesting stuff that we had today. And with all that great information about finance and two dynamic women, I hope you have a wonderful day.